Do you swear on the Constitution of the United States to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
This is Police Radio,
the voice of American law enforcement,
with your host, Randy Sutton.
Hello and welcome to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. Thanks so much for joining me again this week. We've got lots to talk about and a great guest. In fact, let's not waste any time. Let's take a walk into the briefing room where I'm going to give you my view from the blue.
The briefing room. Headlines, stories, and all that touches American law enforcement.
The first thing that I want to talk about today sent my blood pressure through the roof. And it concerns a true injustice. And that is the acquittal of a gunman who murdered a police officer and was acquitted by a moronic jury in Pennsylvania. The shooting occurred back in 2016. A St. Clair Township police officer, and this guy had more than 20 years on the job. His name was Officer Lloyd Reed. Now, Officer Reed had been a Pennsylvania police officer for many years, and he answered a domestic dispute. The domestic dispute was concerning a guy named Ray Shelter. This punk is 33 years old, and he was beating up his girlfriend, and she contacted the police 911. Now, this is a really rural area of Pennsylvania. Actually, it's normally, the jurisdiction is the Pennsylvania State Police, but they had their closest trooper was miles and miles away. So what they did was they contacted the closest township police officer, which was Officer Reed. He's the one that responded. Now, the officer approached the residence on foot, and the female was on the phone with 911. Now, the officers arrived. The suspect comes out armed with a rifle. Okay? He's armed with a rifle. The officers order him to drop the gun. But he points the gun at Officer Reed. So Officer Reed opens fire. The suspect opens fire. The suspect is hit in a non-fatal wound, but the rifle round goes through the officer and kills him. Now, the suspect then flees. He steals a car, and he ditches the gun. Well, when they arrest him, this punk admitted to what he did and said, "Oh, you know what? I just defended myself." Well, it goes to trial, and it is. I don't know whether this jury had a total of IQ of less than 100, because this jury found him not guilty, saying he was defending himself against the police officer. What in God's name is going on? A suspect points a gun at a cop, and he's shot, and the defense is that he was defending himself, and they let him off? This is preposterous. And now let me tell you the rest of the story, because this is going to blow your minds. The injustice here is so great on so many levels. Officer Reed was making $9 an hour. This guy had 20 years as a police officer, and they're paying him $9 an hour to risk his life, to give his life. The widow wept in the courtroom, and the family of this punk and this punk himself were dancing around, celebrating getting away with murder. Unfortunately, there is nothing that can be done. The jury has ruled. But what's going on with juries these days is mind-boggling. First of all, in this case, they let a murderer go. But then this week, there was another mind-numbing decision by a juror. And this time, this was in the weird wacko land of Baltimore, Maryland. I'm going to talk about Baltimore a little more because it's insane what is happening in that city. This time, in this particular case, this arose out of a case about a year ago, and it was a very well known case. You might remember it because this crazy, insane woman was Facebooking live this confrontation with the police at her house. Now, here's what happened. There was a standoff, a 6-hour standoff at this woman's apartment. Okay. Now, she was wanted. She was a wanted person. She and her boyfriend. And officers went to her apartment. Her name is Gaines, by the way. Now, she's in the apartment with her young son, who's like a year old or something like that. On August 1st, 2016, officers went to her apartment to serve warrants on her and her fiancé. All right? And the couple refused to open the door. So the officers got a warrant. They got a search warrant. That's exactly what they're supposed to do. And they forced entry. So when they entered the apartment, there's Corrine Gaines with a shotgun pointed right at him. And Gaines is live streaming herself, holding the weapon during the confrontation. So it's even on Facebook. There's even film here. And then she's got this baby, and she's at times, now they have a standoff. I don't know why they didn't shoot her right away, but they have this standoff, and then she's acting irrationally. She's using the baby as a human shield. She's talking all kinds of crazy, and the law enforcement is trying to talk this woman into giving herself up, but she didn't. So She would at times position herself behind her baby, and then at one point she holds the baby up and she points the shotgun at one of the police officers who opens fire, and they kill her. Well, what else are they supposed to do? She's pointing a gun at him. So the investigation takes place. They clear the officers, of course. Because, I mean, what the hell else are you supposed to do when somebody points a gun at you? You fire. And they kill this woman. Well, her family sues. Family sues the police department. And a jury finds in her benefit, and this is mind-boggling, awards the family $37 million. $37 million. This woman wasn't worth 2 cents, let alone $37 million. How do people sleep at night that come up with this kind of insanity? So two juries, one in Pennsylvania, lets a cop killer go. One in Maryland, Baltimore, which basically tells the police, hey, you know what, your life is worthless, so if you actually try to defend your life, we're going to pay out to the families because it's such excessive force that you actually defend your own life. The insanity is mind-boggling. And while we're on the topic of Baltimore, I am just, it's mind-numbing what's going on there. So first we have this ridiculous verdict. And then we come to find out that the city of Baltimore, now, I've talked about Baltimore a lot because there's a lot to talk about. That's one of the most screwed up police departments and city governments I've ever seen. So here's the latest insanity out of there. It's like they keep on coming. They're coming fast and furious. So now Baltimore, now they can't keep cops there because they're so screwed up. They've had, you know, they have Marilyn Mosby, who is the state's attorney. She's the one that forced the prosecution of a bunch of Baltimore police officers who never should have been charged, ruined their lives. lost the case. Every single one of those officers was found not guilty. And she looked like an idiot. She came out, this was such an entirely politically motivated prosecution. It was astounding. So this is in the Freddie Gray case. Now, just before that, they have the riots in Baltimore, where the mayor orders the police chief or police commissioner, or some idiot named Batts, to order the police to stand down and allow the rioters to burn the city. And also, by the way, not allow police officers to wear any protective equipment, which causes the injury, in some cases, the disabling injuries to several law enforcement officers, and they get away with it, okay? So this is how screwed up Baltimore is. And then, on top of that, they have the riots. The mayor looks like a complete idiot. She finishes out her term, and they have another idiotic mayor in there now. So the system isn't changing, okay? They changed the police hierarchy. It's the murder capital of the world now. The police are ordered to stand down. It's bedlam in the streets. So who the hell would want to be a cop there, right? The morale is in the tank. You're not getting the training. They've had several corruption scandals, which when you have a department that has very poor leadership and a lack of pride, corruption unfortunately can result. So we got this city is a mess, just a hot mess. Well, guess what? If you have less than 5 years on as a police officer there and you try to quit, they've just announced that they are going to sue police officers for upwards of $27,000if they leave the department. They force these guys to sign contracts when they're coming on the job, that if they don't stay for 5 years, they're going to have to pay tens of thousands of dollars to the city. Well, I mean, I thought that this went out in the 1800s under indentured servitude. Do you remember indentured servitude? It was also known as slavery. Basically, you have to work for so many years to buy yourself out of the slavery. Well, that's exactly what they're doing here. This is modern day slavery, using the police as the slaves. What the hell is going on? So when confronted with this, the city there, you couldn't get anybody to admit it. They refuse to admit that they have this policy, right? This is public policy. The mayor wouldn't return any phone calls. The police chief wouldn't return any phone calls. And this is what's going on. Can you imagine forcing police officers to stay and using money, the financial issues that would force them into positions that they can't feed their family? That's how the city of Baltimore deals with the problem of people leaving the police department. I got a really good suggestion. How about instead of suing the police officers, they just replace the entire city government leadership, because that's what needs to happen in Baltimore. These people are out of control. They need to go. And law enforcement needs to be allowed to be law enforcement. You know, if you want that city to be safe, if you want the citizens of your community to be safe, then you better let the cops do what the cops do. Now, and then you add on to that this recent jury decision. Now, the jury is made up of people from Baltimore. You have a city government that is constantly on the attack. Oh, by the way, I forgot to say this, that 2 weeks ago, they announced, the city announced that if you're a police officer and you get sued by a citizen, you're on your own. They're not going to defend you. I've never seen it happen on any in any police department in any city in the entire United States. That's how these idiots in city government in Baltimore are dealing with their crime issues, by destroying the only people that are standing up for the citizens, and that is the police. And do the citizens care? Judging by that jury decision, that is very questionable, isn't it? Can you imagine being a cop in that town? Baltimore, I don't know what's going to happen with you. I know one thing. If I were a cop, I'd be looking for another job. Now, while we're on the topic of disrespect, I saw a really disturbing story. And this isn't about a cop, per se. This is about a citizen. Someone who is a business person in Missouri. And actually, it's two businesses. Her name is Sherry Elder, and she is the owner of Elder's Antiques. And she and her family have owned this business for 32 years. And she has formed relationships with the police in her area. You know, that's what citizens, good citizens and businesses do. They have relationships. They know each other. That way, when there are issues, they feel comfortable talking to each other. So she supports law enforcement. And you know, Missouri is after Ferguson and some of the other insanity there, some of the leadership in that city, in that state government and local government, I mean, these people they're out of their freaking minds too. So, but this woman, good, honest citizen, she puts up a thin blue line flag. You know, the thin blue line flag, it's an American flag that's got a blue stripe on it. And what it is, it shows tribute to officers who have fallen in the line of duty. She puts it up. Well, you know what happens? The harassment starts. She gets threatened. Another store gets vandalized. People put notes. Either the flag comes down or you go down. You know, this type of conduct is frightening. It shows a horrific mob mentality. And this is the type of thing that that undermines not only law enforcement, but when you attack people that support law enforcement, that's when anarchy rises. And that's what this is. I tell you the truth. I wish that I could go down to Missouri and set up a surveillance on that store and catch whoever is harassing this woman. And I got to tell you, they would feel the wrath. And that, my friends, is my view from the blue. Anybody that has worn ballistic body armor knows that, first of all, it's uncomfortable. Secondly, it's hot as hell. And depending on the climate, you know, these things can get a little bit rank. Well, you know, I know that as a cop, I was constantly struggling with this, especially in Vegas, where it's so damn hot that you sweat within this thing, and one of the difficult things is keeping it fresh. Well, there is now an amazing product that eliminates the odor from your vest in 4 seconds or less. Yeah, I know, it's fantastic. And it doesn't only work on vests, it works on anything. Diaper pails, so it's not just for cops, it's for household use as well. It's an odor eliminator and doesn't have any harmful chemicals. It was made by a very famous deodorant company, whose name I will not mention. But this thing is amazing, and if they got a great website name, it's stinkyvest.com. Yeah, you heard me right, stinkyvest.com. Go check this out. It's good for, like I said, all odors, pet odors, but it's made specifically for the vest. But it's good for everything all around the house. So check it out at stinkyvest.com. One thing I know from being a police officer for as many years as I've been is that off-duty police officers spend a lot of their time working extra jobs. You know, the police salaries around the country, let's face it, they're not that great. And off-duty officers have to, in many cases, work extra jobs, security jobs, traffic jobs. So there is a company, believe it or not, the owner of this company was actually a guest on my show, Bonnie Lucas, and it's a company called Law Enforcement Specialists Incorporated, and they put off-duty officers to work in more than 40 states throughout this country. It's a phenomenal idea, and these people really know what they're doing. So if you're an active duty police officer and you're looking for extra jobs, now they do this in connection with your own police agency, so you're not violating any department rules, regulations. You're actually working in concert. They just find extra jobs for you, and then they work with your agency to get you those extra jobs. So it's a phenomenal idea. They've been doing this for years, and like I said, they're in most states in the union. I didn't even know they existed, but when I spoke to Bonnie, who owns this company, I was very, very impressed. So check them out at www.offdutypoliceofficers.com. That's www.offdutypoliceofficers.com. And you'll be able to find out whether you're in there in a state that they work in. They tout themselves as an exclusive nationwide security solution utilizing active duty law enforcement officers. Having trained, armed, and uniformed police officers present is an extremely effective way of deterring threats. And we all know that's true. So check them out, www.offdutypoliceofficers.com. It's a great way to make extra money, and it's completely within your department guidelines. And check them out.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health. Sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
With me today in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, is a guest who is very timely considering the tragedy of the latest school shooting. His name is Joe Pangaro. And Joe is a retired New Jersey police lieutenant. He is also the director of school security at an unnamed school in New Jersey. And he is the owner and founder of Pangaro Training and Management. It's a safety training course business for law enforcement and schools. Joe, thanks so much for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Randy, thank you very much for having me, and I'd like to say hello to your wonderful audience.
And I do have a wonderful audience, you're absolutely right. And, I'm so glad we had the opportunity to get together and talk today. I appreciate you taking the time, because of considering everything that's going on with the latest school shooting, I don't think there's a hotter topic
not only in law enforcement, but in the country today. And this is your bailiwick. Tell me, first of all, when did you get into the business of training for school security, and what led you to do that?
Well, let's see. Going back to 2009, I was still an active duty police lieutenant, and one of the things I was transitioned into was being the training officer for the agency. So I started to figure out, you know, how boring can law enforcement training be? I mean, we've all sat there, you melt into the chair, it's death by PowerPoint. So I said, I can't do that to my guys and girls. I have to find a better way. So I tried to find a better way of teaching that was engaging and fun. Well, in the course of teaching my cops search and seizure, domestic violence, all the kind of stuff that we teach police officers, we started to see that there was a lot of this school violence taking place. And I was tasked by the leadership at that time to, hey, can you come up with some training that we can go to our schools with and let them know kind of what they can expect if there is a shooting in school? What are the police going to do, et cetera, et cetera?
Right.
So I went to the school district and I spoke to them. And, you know, they practiced some lockdown stuff, but they really had no idea what was going to happen when the police showed up. They just assumed they'd be locked down and, you know, the police would come in and ask everyone to leave, or they would all run out of the building. And I started to realize that we had to really create something serious here to help the schools. Well, that led into realizing that maybe more people than just my district need this training. So I started Pangaro Training for a couple of reasons. One, I wanted to bring the training to law enforcement outside of just my cops, and then I included schools in it. So since 2009, I've been teaching and training all over the state of New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and New York law enforcement. And in the last 2 years, we've branched out and started teaching school districts all over the area. We've got businesses on board now. I'm teaching business people how to do threat assessments, how to secure their personnel, because as I'm sure you're aware, being involved in all of this every day, of all the shooting, workplace violence and school shootings, only one-third of them take place in schools. The other two-thirds take place everywhere else all of us live, and no one is ready for this. So I started presenting it to school districts out there through my training company. I had people reach out to me to ask if I could come and do a seminar for them. Bucks County, Pennsylvania had come to me. I taught police schools there, and they said, hey, can you do anything for schools? So we put together a program that was financed by Homeland Security, and we had 65 school districts show up. And I started to realize there's a great need for this training everywhere. So that's kind of taken me to where I am today.
Well, that's interesting. I don't think it could have been more timely considering what everything that we are facing today. You know, what is your, on this recent school shooter involving this punk who went in there and just opened up with a rifle, a long gun. There's so much coming out now, but there seems to be this once again, this same outcry about gun control. It's always seems to come down to some politicization. You know, when you hear, though, how the law enforcement response to this was dismal, you know, where do you see this? I mean, does your training affect that?
Well, I have to say, in addressing Florida is, this incident is so horrific, not only because these poor kids and students and adults were killed there by this young man who obviously had problems that everybody knew about, but the bells were ringing as loud as could be, and it seems as though the ball was dropped. And I know everybody says the FBI had all this information, but you know, one of the things I've been concentrating on for the last couple of years, and you say timely, not 3 weeks ago, I wrote an article. I write for Blue Magazine, which is, you're familiar with those guys, a tremendous law enforcement magazine. And I had written an article, and I sent in to them. It's, can we spot signs of violence before it erupts? This was something I was working on a couple of weeks ago, because this is one of the things I talk about all the time. There's two kinds of threats. Internal threat and external threat. The external threat, we're all crazy about that. We buy special locks and we buy these cameras and we have security guards to protect us from somebody coming in from outside to hurt us. The internal threat is the kid or the coworker that's allowed through the security process and comes into the building. Like, I find out most schools do not have backpack checks. They don't do metal detectors. So any kid that walks in the door with a gun or a guitar case, as we're hearing from the West Coast the other day, any kid that can stick a gun in a guitar case is just going to walk right through the door and attack everyone. So it's extremely important to understand what are the signs and the symptoms of people who are potentially violent and how do we react to them so that we can save ourselves before a kid walks into the school and shoots 17 people. It's absolutely unbelievable. And there are lots of things we can do. That internal threat means you have to know the temperature of your school or your workplace. By knowing the temperature, that means what's going on with the kids. You know, all this research that people do, they find there's two main reasons that people and kids don't come forward when they know someone is potentially violent. Number one, they don't want to be a rat. They don't want to be the person that came forward and told on somebody, especially kids, because what if they were wrong? And number two, they don't know there's anybody there they can trust. And when you look back on that, what they mean by that is there's no one they can trust not to overreact, but to look at it, investigate it, and then deal with it appropriately. So that's why nobody comes forward. You look at how many times we'll see an incident and they'll go there and kids will say, oh yeah, we knew that kid was dangerous. We knew that person was dangerous. In workplaces, they all say, well, Bob over there, Bob is the most likely one to hurt everybody. We all know that. Well, if people know this, why isn't anything done about it to understand the temperature of the building and take some action before the person goes off, some intervention? So that's kind of what I push when I'm out there. What is going on? Do you actually really investigate bullying, or do you just give it lip service? Because if you don't really investigate bullying and make sure that it stops, if the victim feels, I told my parents and nothing happened, I told my school and nothing happened, well, who's left to take care of them? Some of these kids feel in this modern world that they should take care of it themselves. And that's where this comes in. So not every shooter is bullied, but a lot of these kids have had those kind of problems. And then we get involved in the medications for the illness. Mental illness is a taboo subject in our country. We don't really talk about it. We don't want to get involved in it. Look at law enforcement. If somebody came in and had a problem in law enforcement, hey, I think I'm having a problem, what's the first thing you're going to do to that cop?
Oh, they're going to suspend them right away.
They're going to suspend him and get him all the mental health he needs, but he's not going back on the job, so a cop wouldn't come forward.
Right.
And that's what prevents all these people from coming forward. There's such a taboo about mental illness, and it's rampant. There's so much undiagnosed mental illness, and we see that. So that leads us to, what do we do if we know the temperature, we know somebody is having a problem, we know they're acting out? Then you have to have an intervention. And what that intervention means in the bigger world, that's part of, I think, the discussion that we need to have as law enforcement, as our public officials, and the people who live at home. What are we willing to do with this? You know, you look at this kid. He made all of these threats. Everybody knew about him. He had weapons. He had photographs. He had pictures. Now they're saying he was selling knives out of a lunchbox. Couldn't we get a warrant to go and get this kid and take him to a mental health professional, search his house, seize his weapons, and see the outcome of the mental health issue? Now, it might have to be a new category of warrant. It might be some new laws we have to explore. But if we did that, he goes to the mental health professional, and they turn out, you know what, the kid is just a kid running his mouth. He's stupid. And then the judge decides to give the person back the weapons. Then we've done our due diligence. We've looked at it. We've taken some action. Turns out the kid has problems. You get him the help he needs. He doesn't get those weapons. So it's kind of something more.
I couldn't agree with you more. And here's one of the aspects that I find so disappointing. Is that in this particular case, and not just this case, there have been so many warning signs, flags, and I mean this one especially. I mean, this kid couldn't have done any more to bring attention to himself, and
right.
still, law enforcement missed it. I mean, with the local PD responded numerous times to his house. On all kinds of calls for service. And then, of course, the FBI receiving that information. It seems that almost that there should almost be an entire new database that is created for intelligence gathering that's only accessible by law enforcement, where, you know, there are items like this entered into it, so that there, at least there is something that people can, that law enforcement can access.
Right. I think you've hit the nail on the head. This is exactly right. But what this is we're talking about here, this is a brand new paradigm. It's a new thing for us to come up with, and it's going to run into a million court challenges because we're Americans. We have our individual rights to be free from all of this kind of stuff. But the reality is people are talking about we have to do something. Well, now we've identified it. You've identified a way to do that. We don't have laws that match that. So we have to find a way that there is that database, then who would have access to it? Would they use the information improperly? Or would they just use it when you go to get a gun background? You push the button, you look in there, and you say, oh, you know, this person has mental health issues. Then you're allowed to explore those, and they don't get the gun. But if we don't know, then they're going to get the gun and go off. I had somebody say to me the other day, what if somebody goes in, and they're perfectly sane, and they buy a gun, it sits in the drawer for 8 years, then they have a mental issue, and they go out and shoot 20 people. I said, what about it? How do you go get that gun from that person? They already got it when they were perfectly sane. They followed all the rules. They did what they did, and they exercised their constitutional right. Now what do we do? Well, once they started going off, wouldn't it be great to have the database you're talking about? We go to the place, hey, Joe's acting really weird. He's saying some crazy things. We check the database and find out, gee, Joe's been seeing a psychiatrist for these problems, and he has guns. Now we get the warrant that I'm talking about. We go and remove the guns. We get him the help he needs. And then the courts decide down the road, should he get the guns back or are they permanently removed? It's a new place for us to go. It creates an entire new set of standards, and we're going to have to go through the law, through the court systems to try and make that happen. But other than that, what are we going to do to stop these things?
I was thinking of basically an intelligence gathering site, not so much utilized to keep someone from getting a gun, but giving law enforcement, you know as well as I do that hell, a police department that is separated even by just a street, you know, because there's, you know, 14 different jurisdictions in the county, they don't talk to each other, let alone, you know,
right,
a federal agency, a state agency, and a local agency. So
right,
there could be redundant information, as in this case. You know, the Broward County cops had information, the FBI had information, but no one shared it. And perhaps
right,
if there was a new database that was created for this purpose, not for so much taking someone's rights away, but simply as an intelligence gathering place, then we might not run into the same constitutional safeguards.
Right. Because people have a right to have their weapons. I believe in the Constitution. I believe in the Second Amendment. If you are a good, decent person, you should exercise your right and own a weapon for protection or whatever. You know, one of the things along the lines of what you're saying, I was considering, I'm saying, what if there, you know, who keeps track of all that? Like you're saying, seven different agencies. Here in Monmouth County, where I am, we have the prosecutor's office, we have the sheriff's department, we have 52 municipalities.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes they're talking to each other, but you know how it is. We all got different radio frequencies, different computer systems. Stuff doesn't always cross over. What if each prosecutor's office maybe created an office of school security information where that information could be paid? You know, somebody's tasked with that, not with burglary, not with drugs, not with prostitution. You're worried about school security stuff, and you make sure that information is disseminated within law enforcement. There has to be something. We can't keep doing what we're doing. We have to do something different. And your question earlier that I didn't get to right away was, you know, where do we see all of this? You know, is it happening politically? Is it coming and going? People are going to demand a change. I see a sea change with this incident that I hadn't seen before. You know, the kids, maybe it's just because of the times we're in right now, the political upheaval we're in right now. These poor children at that school are traumatized. Kids across the country are traumatized. I have an 18-year-old daughter. She's traumatized by this. And these kids are demanding that the adults, you and me, do something about this. And they are the political future. They are the ones that are going to change things. And I think that's what's pushing it off into that that political arena. I don't want to say the kids are being used to an extent, but I'm feared that the kids are going to be used in an attempt to change things to the way people want them, as opposed to let's all decide what's the right way to go forward and do something that's meaningful, not that just feels good or fits somebody's agenda.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The political left and the anti-gun lobby is they're in full force now, and they and listen, we all empathize and sympathize with those with the kids, not just in that school, but as you said, this is something that all kids in all schools are feeling, and but you know, here's the thing, they're not going to give any. Those kids are acting out of emotion, which is understandable.
Yes.
They're not going to bring forth any solutions. This is going to be a hot topic. There's going to be the media is going to just, I mean, they're already all over this thing, and they're going to take these kids who are so upset. They're going to put them on TV. It's going to be very emotional. It's going to tug at people's heartstrings. And all of that is a lot of that is for TV ratings and not for actually getting anything done. The thing is, there's been several mentions from a lot of different sources that remember when Israel was getting attacked by terrorists, the schools were being attacked because that's out of the terrorism handbook. Let's go after the most vulnerable population.
Sure.
And they did something about it. There hasn't been an attack in a school in decades. Is that time come for the United States now to put armed security in every school in every state?
Well, as the director of school security here, I have had my phone and my emails just absolutely inundated with parents who are now really shaken to their core. I mean, we've all kind of lived through these incidents, and you know, they're far away, and in reality they're very limited, but if it happens to you, it's 100%. So these people are calling me, and the sound in their voice is different. The emails, they're getting together and going to town halls now, and they're demanding that their local politicians start to put together funding to armed security, law enforcement guys and girls in every single school. That is becoming a wave. Now, as we both can see from historical things, if nothing happens for a while, this will lose its energy and that will probably pass because it's expensive to stick cops in all these schools.
Right.
It absolutely is. So this wave will probably pass. There may be some different legislation that comes out of it, but if there's another incident, even on the periphery of this one disappearing, that push is only going to get stronger. Here in New Jersey, they created, we have, you know, regular police officers. Then we have special two officers, which have the same powers as a regular, only they're an hourly rate. So shore towns and towns that need extra cops in the summer can hire them, and they have full police powers. Well, now they've come up with, and they've passed it through the governor. We now have a class of class three officers. These are retired police officers that would be hired by local police departments to work in the schools at a specific pay rate. So that, and they answer to the chief of police. They're not regular cops. They're only have police powers while they're in the schools, but they're there to be armed law enforcement to protect children. Towns can hire them if they choose to do it. Some have not, because they're still expensive, $30, $35 an hour, times how many officers do you need? You know, running a police department, you have to have days off, you have to have vacation time, all that stuff.
Exactly.
It gets very expensive. But this is starting to be a clamor that I'm hearing louder and louder. And, you know, God forbid something else happens. I think that's probably going to be the wave of the future, armed personnel.
Well, let's explore another possibility. I was contacted just a couple of days ago by a guy who is a teacher. And this teacher, when there was a school shooting maybe 10 years ago, this school system decided we're going to arm some of our teachers. So mm-hmm. working with the local police, several of the staff in the school are specially trained by law enforcement, and they carry concealed weapons in the classroom. You know, it would seem to me that that is a pretty damn good alternative, and one that wouldn't be cost prohibitive.
Right. And you do hear that out there. And some states have more tolerance for that from others. And our country is split between more progressive, left-wing type of states and thinking and more conservative type of places where they're more open to thoughts like that. You know, if you had individuals that you could clear and that had maybe some military experience or had some characteristics that you could trust to sit in a classroom with kids armed, I don't see that as really a problem. If I knew, like, I could screen them like I do my cops. You know, we give these cops guns and we tell them go out there and protect the public. When they're off duty, they got their guns. There's probably people in the schools we could train the same way. And then you have a chance to maybe save some people. I look at that football coach that was killed. What a hero this man was to put himself between those children and that shooter. If the guy had a gun, he might have taken a round or two, maybe, but he might have taken that guy out before he killed anybody else.
Exactly.
Maybe.
Exactly right.
You know, it's hard here in this part of the country where there's just an anti-gun feeling very strong. But I tell everybody, every parents group, every business, everywhere I go, no matter how you feel about guns, pro or anti-gun, the only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. That's a reality. You know, other than that, you got unarmed security in the school. If there's a guy with a gun, they're hiding too. Because other than that, they're just going to sacrifice themselves. They have no way to fight back. We have to be able to fight back when it happens. We have to prepare in advance in case it happens. And we have to change the way we look at these things.
I couldn't agree more, of course. When I look at all the different options, you know, unfortunately, we have seen that there has been an anti-gun feeling that has spiraled out of control in a lot of different places. And the schools become, quote, gun-free zones, unquote, which is nothing but some liberal mantra the same people that believe that criminals are going to look at the gun-free zone and not carry a gun are the same ones that believe in unicorns and rainbows. I mean, it's just,
right.
It's absurd. But you know, some people believe that that's actually taking action, making it a gun-free
right.
zone, when it's just
right.
the opposite. You know,
sure.
And I know that the only thing that is going to take out a bad guy with a gun is what?
A good guy with a gun.
Exactly. And that's
force on force.
That's the reality. And it seems that,
yep.
that even though we've seen this happen over and over again, what's staring us in the face is arm the teachers.
Yep.
That's what's staring us in the face. It seems to me it's the simplest. It is the most effective, and it is the cheapest way to go to protect our
right.
kids.
Right, and when you look at it that way, just using those qualifiers, is it affordable? Yeah, would you have to give the teacher a stipend for it? Sure, but it's not hiring a full-time police officer. Can we screen who we give the guns to? Yes. Do we give them to every single teacher? No, because lots of them are not going to want anything to do with a gun.
Sure.
But there are enough people in the school that would be willing to be trained, would go to the training, would carry a weapon, and would be able to fight back if a demon came through the door. There's no question about it. We get caught up in these fantasies, like you're saying, these fantasies of the left that, you know, we don't let weapons in here. Well, who believes in that? There's rules against murder. There's laws against murder. And people still get murdered.
Doesn't that, you know, that's one of the things that boggles my mind. They're screaming for more laws, more law, more law, more law. You're not going to legislate the ending of school shootings, okay? It's not going to happen, people. It's already, if someone's already decided they're going to kill someone, they couldn't care less about violating a gun law.
Right.
They're already committed
Absolutely.
To committing murder.
Right, and there's a lot of laws against murder.
Yeah, right. There's tons of them, right.
I look down in Florida. Florida executes people who commit murder. How much stronger of a law can you possibly have than that? And people still kill each other down there. Well, you know what? Laws are only for the law-abiding, people who choose to follow the law. Other than that, we're dealing with a different entity, and we can't deal with them as though they are just regular like the rest of us. Criminals don't follow the same rules. We can't play those games with them. We have to figure out ways to get around their behaviors, think of them ahead of time, and stop them before they can hurt us.
So I think, you know, you and I have had a discussion here for less than half an hour, and we've come up with a couple, I think, methodologies that could make a serious difference. One is the creation of a new database to be shared by law enforcement, similar to the NCIC system and other criminal justice systems, but used for intelligence gathering on threats similar to what we have faced with this recent, basically a huge communication tool. And then secondly, if the shooter gets in, having people on premises trained, ready, and able to counter the threat. We're not Congress, but I think those are two reasonable suggestions.
There's two good ideas right there. Everybody's saying, what can you come up with other than just, you know, chanting and holding up signs? There's two. Imagine if we had an hour to sit and think about things, what we could come up with. So the point is that there are things that can be done. We just have to be willing to walk down that road. It means change. It means different laws, maybe, so that we can allow these things to happen. But if we want change, we have to make it happen. There are ways to prevent this.
Absolutely. So, Joe, you train schools, you train police officers. How do people find you to get in touch with you? And do you train all over the country, or are you regionalized in New Jersey?
Well, right now I'm in the tri-state area, but I have gone out of the area, and I will certainly go anywhere to provide my training. My website is jpangaro.com, www.the letter J, and then my last name, Pangaro, P-A-N-G-A-R-O.com. There's contact information on there. But recently I've had, what's interesting is that I see a lot of private sector groups starting to come forward and take an interest in these kind of things. One of them particularly, there's a company in Long Island, A-Plus Technology Solutions. They saw that what training I was doing. They came out to one of the Jersey trainings, and they said, hey, would you come to our place in Long Island and provide your training? So I said, sure. I contracted with them. I went there. They invited a whole bunch of school districts to come in and see the training. Well, from that, those schools would contact me, then I would go help them with training. And we've done this model in several different locations. So I certainly can do that with companies that are out there. If there's a school district that wants me, I can get private groups to support that, to get me out to those places. I have programs. One big one that I did for Homeland Security is called Plan and Prepare. This is for school districts who really have some idea, but not a complete idea of what they should be doing. And Plan and Prepare gives them soup to nuts. Here's what really works. Here's what doesn't work. Here's how to do an assessment, etc. So by contacting jpangaro.com and reaching out to me, we can make that happen. Same thing for law enforcement. I've had agencies from around the country call me, and they're interested in the training because not everyone gets the same training that different parts of the country get. So I'm willing to go anywhere. And the way I do that is if somebody hosts my training, I can, you know, take care of everything to get the officers in the seats. You provide me a location and a date and time, I'll get myself there and do the training. So that I'm willing to go anywhere and everywhere for schools, law enforcement. And like I said, now I'm in the business world. I'm going to businesses, teaching them how to keep their people safe. Because, you know, we both know that most workplace violence is the same as school violence. It can be prevented if you think a little bit ahead of time.
Exactly. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time, Joe, to come on to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of law enforcement, sharing your experience. I think we just solved the problem, you and I.
Well, I hope we're at least part of the solution at the very least, Randy. Thank you so much for having me on. And to my brother and sister officers out there, be safe, be careful. We are a noble profession. We are doing the right thing by our friends, our family, and the citizens we've sworn to protect. But be careful. Come home every day.
Amen to that. Danger!
End of watch.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay our respects to the men and women of the profession who have made the ultimate sacrifice and given their lives in the line of duty. This year so far, we have 19 law enforcement officers who have given their lives. Unfortunately, I have one name to read this week. His name is Deputy Sheriff Kevin Stanton. Deputy Sheriff Kevin Stanton was killed when his patrol car was struck by a tractor trailer on I-95 just north of Route 50 at approximately 5:10 a.m. The tractor trailer suffered a tire blowout, causing the driver to lose control and swerve into the left lane where Deputy Stanton was driving. Deputy Stanton's patrol car was struck in the rear by the semi. Deputy Stanton has served with the Brevard County Sheriff's Office for 10 and a half years. Deputy Sheriff Kevin Stanton, Brevard County Sheriff's Office in Florida. End of watch. Saturday, February 17th, 2018. May he rest in peace. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. I enjoy having guests on. I hope that you enjoy it as well. You can follow me on Facebook if you go to Randy Sutton, public figure, and just like and follow. I do a lot of my posting every single day on that venue. And also, if you are a Twitterer, at LT Randy Sutton. That's at LT Randy Sutton. That's on Twitter. And I'm going to do a few more social medias as well. I'm also on LinkedIn. So if you want to hook up on LinkedIn, check me out there. So thanks again for listening in on this week's episode. And I'll see you again next week.